Resource Committee meeting to order this afternoon. In attendance are Representative Olson, Representative Kapsner, Representative Gatto, Co-Chair Samuels, Representative Seaton, Representative Elkins, Representative Ledoux, and Chairman Ramirez. The dress code is relaxed today in honor of, honor of Valentine's. And we are going to continue hearing testimony on HB 130, the University Lands Bill, offered by the governor. Do we have Joe Beadle yet from the university?
No.
Not yet. I think we will start with testimony here. We'll start with testimony here in the room, and then when Joe Beadle joins us from the university, he wants to discuss land distribution by the university. So here in the room is first is Kathy Wasserman.
Mr. Chairman, was it your intent today to pass out this bill?
No, Representative Kapsner, we're just going to sit and listen today.
Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman. I am employed by the Alaska Municipal League, and we try to address bills and issues that will impact all the municipalities of the state. One of the main problems that I see with this bill at this point, I noticed in the governor's letter to Representative Harris that the bill is the product of more than a year of discussions between the Department of Natural Resources and the university. And my concern is that it's been a issue of discussion within the municipalities for about a week. I would first of all ask that this bill be slowed down. The communities are working hard. I've been contacted by many communities over the past week to find out exactly how this will impact them, and it's very difficult with all the other bills coming at them at one time to sort of sift through this and see how it might affect them. So the communities have asked that we first see that this bill could be perhaps slowed down. Secondly, we're a bit concerned about the fact that the public process has been slightly narrowed down on this bill as opposed to SB 7, which came out a couple of years ago. So we would also ask that public process be inserted back into this bill if it is to go any further, and give the communities time to weigh in on this and have some public hearings or some workshops in their communities to talk to the university about what the intent is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Are there any questions for Ms. Wasserman? Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you recommend then that this bill go to community and regional affairs for more public input?
I certainly think that there should be some more public input, yes. At this point, there have been these hearings, but most of the communities are not even quite sure how it's going to impact them, and just to get the maps and get everything loaded down and figure out how it will impact them, you want to have your ducks in a row before you can certainly say anything. So
they're not on the list now, but maybe we should see that they're added. The committee. Thank you, sir.
Any other questions for Ms. Wasserman? Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate that. Is Judith Brake here?
My name is Judy Brakel. I'm from Gustavus. Like Kathy Wasserman, I feel like the public process for this has been extremely narrowed down. There was no public information about it really until about a week ago, and then I could see why the proponents would want to fast track it through with those sites already labeled in there, because if there's time available, there will be a lot of people who are not going to like it as they gradually find out about the land. 40,000 acres in southeast Alaska along the coast, cherry-picking places, is going to be really cause a lot of fuss. Years ago, I was at the Board of Fish in the early 80s. Just some crab fishermen in southeast wanted some bays where they could put their crab traps, store them below water or on the shore, and you think, you know, distant places from communities, low impact, you think that would have gone all right. It didn't. There were other fishermen, other people. There were so many reasons that this bay or that bay shouldn't do it, so the board dropped it. And I think you're going to find that same level of special concern about special places I personally want to talk about Baranof Warm Springs. There are quite a few people, a lot of people, who have a special connection to Warm Springs Bay. And it's not good to spread development around there. And the site that was selected is over by this special, precious little tidal lagoon that you can get in there in a skiff at high water, and then at low water it exits by a waterfall. Tide water coming out of there. Just be a terrible shame to have development going on over there. There's already a little town site, and there's enough property for whatever around there. I think that think the university does need money. They don't need land. They don't need a bunch of little parcels that are controversial spread all over. That's not, I mean, we can revise the ELF. We can do a please, an income tax. I'd be happy to pay an income tax. Don't give away these very special places and have some big development going on there that people are not going to like. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your passionate testimonies. Anybody have questions for Ms. Brake? Representative Seaton?
Thank you. Most of the parcels in Southeastern and other places are in the settlement or developed category under DNR, so they're slated to be sold for settlement uses at some point in time. Is your objection to these parcels being sold at any time by the state? I mean, should they go into a wilderness category or something, or is it just your not wanting the university to be the landowner?
First, I'd like to point out that this one at Baranof Warm Springs was for dispersed recreation. It was not for development in the land planning categories. Where am I going from there? I think, well, the mental health lands issue was similar, that lands were supposed to be, you know, selected, and then they're supposed to make money off of them. And a lot of communities have been pretty concerned about that. I live in Gustavus now. By the way, I've lived in Southeast all my life and been going to Baranof Warm Springs for 50 years. But I live in Gustavus, and the mental health lands cause enough concern to the community. There's something completely backed by the whole community of all different segments that we wound up raising money ourselves and getting grants and so forth to buy a huge amount of that mental health land to keep it in public as public property. And I think that what's going on now is there's no planning involved. There's no nobody gets to weigh in about why one place or another is not a good place to do it. I'm sure that some of these places are probably by some near some communities and might be desirable for the community. There probably are some to have them get into development status, but we'll never know which are which under this kind of process.
Just a follow-up?
Sure. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. So the ones that are classified in developmental status, you really don't, that's not what you're testifying on. You're testifying on mainly on this Warm Springs Bay property that was in dispersed recreational, and that's your concern at this point. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, I don't know which other ones might be in development status, and I just do know that there's a strong tendency around Southeast for people to just like stuff to not get developed and stay, like I told you about the crab trap storage problem. I mean, that seems so minor. But there's a lot of attachment to these far-flung, you know, there's a lot of coastline, a lot of bays. You wouldn't think that, you know, you'd think there'd be some despair. Well, there really aren't any despair.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Paul Johnson. Just for the record, we're going to try and limit public testimony to about 3 minutes. I'm sure it won't be a problem for you, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah. My name is Paul Johnson. I live in the Elfin Cove area and have all my life. Gentlemen, I guess I'm disappointed that, as has been pointed out, that...
And ladies.
And ladies.
Sorry. Valentine's Day.
That is Valentine's Day. Thanks, Dave.
My pleasure. I'm looking out for you. I want things to go well for you. Come on.
These lands have a lot of history to them. And I don't think even the DNR or even the university has an idea of what they're getting here in a lot of cases. They walk through these lands quickly in the month of June, and what's going on in the month of August is a whole different story on some of these pieces. Not all of them are next to communities and have huge economic ramifications down the road. One of the big ones is a lot of these lands haven't been under a borough yet, and so the borough gets selection of lands and is going to be playing second fiddle here. I believe definitely it needs to go to community and regional affairs, so we have somebody from Southeast that gets their two bits in on this. But lands that I'm aware of on land-grant universities like the University of Washington, they get land downtown Seattle. They own Rainier Tower. They own...
public recreation.
And I know I'm not as smooth as Mr. Beadle by any stretch of the imagination, but I assure you that the land work that's been going on with the Tongass going back a long ways, we just got our EIS done for our use days, and the economic ramifications. We'd like to have our children go to the university. And if we don't have an economic opportunity here in the future, having a university is not going to do us any good in those rural areas. Thanks.
Welcome. Paul, I will point out to you that part of the university's plan was not just for your kids, but it was your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. And the way that you get land in the middle of a developed urban or rural area is by fulfilling the mission of the land grant, and communities grow around it. I mean, that's the Walmart plan. You know, they find a piece of property in an outlying area, and then the community grows toward them. And so I appreciate your sensitivity to it.
And I understand that. And so some areas like that I'm referring to, Representative, those some areas have mining, some areas have timber, some areas have oil. Our area is tourism. And so those communities that are already in existence that are like Elfin Cove is 91 acres. That's it. Right. And the other parcel that we're looking at is in Idaho Inlet is 590. And it is the area of economic opportunity for the Cove. That's the bottom line. You take that away, and that community doesn't have the opportunity. Bottom line.
Are there any questions for Mr. Johnson? Thank you very much for your testimony, sir. I appreciate it. For the record, Representative Crawford has just joined us. We're now going to go to the phone. Again, 3-minute time limit. And Dr. Bob Johnson and Kodiak, I saw your name was held over from last week. If you'd like to go ahead, sir.
I would. Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Bob Johnson. I'm a 67-year resident of Kodiak. I think the majority, if not all, Kodiak residents are upset about the land grant of Spruce Cape, Narrow Cape, the remaining area to the remaining area that isn't occupied by the AADC to the university. This is Kodiak's playground. There's a working cattle ranch out there. There's Fossil Beach, which is a tourist attraction. And any suggestion that we might lose control over that piece of property upsets us. At first glance, when we look at Mark Anderson being the president of the university and the chairman of the AADC, anyone who was of suspicious nature would think that he had his eye on the value of that property. Certainly he's aware of its value and of its value to AADC and possibly the military. When he was quizzed on that at the assembly meeting the other night, he laughed it off. Well, he may not intend to sell that property to the AADC or the military now or in the near future, but I am of a suspicious nature, having had dealings with the government before and found that promises are not always kept. And certainly in this day of rapid changes, we don't know what the future holds. We definitely oppose this land grant to the university, because even if it is not their intent to sell it for profit, for use to sustain the university, and certainly we approve of the university being sustained and continuing, but not at our possible future expense. And we can't tell what the future brings, and neither can Mark Anderson. There may come a time when the university needs that money, and at that time they may very well sell it. I certainly would if I were in their position. And we don't want to take that chance, and we do not want that property grant to go ahead. That's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. And for the record, I'm assuming Mark Anderson, you mean Mark Hamilton, the president of the university. But we all understand your meaning. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Johnson? Representative Samuels?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the people of Kodiak use that land, you just described it as it's our playground, do you think the people of Kodiak should buy it?
No, we can't afford it.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions for Dr. Johnson? Sir, thank you very much for your testimony and returning this week to share your point of view with us. I think we're now going to go to Fairbanks as a courtesy of the chair to Ron Rasmussen. Are you with us, Ron?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay, my name is Ron Rasmussen. I'm part owner of Northland Wood Products in Fairbanks here. We employ 30 to 50 people year-round. We started our sawmill in 1965 and have operated a sawmill as a basis of our business for the last 40 years. We have relied upon state timber sales for all of our raw material needs, and Alaska white spruce specifically. We oppose the 51,000-acre grant to the University Research Forest as listed. About 20 years ago, the Tamanoss Valley State Forest was developed to ensure a constant timber base for our industry. The grant in question will take 51,000 acres of the most prime, most accessible forest land in a state forest and essentially take it out of production. This block of timber may be studied and researched to death, but it most likely won't produce another stick of lumber or provide any more real jobs again. I'm not against research. It is very necessary, but it can coexist with forest production, as was done in the Bonanza Creek Experimental Forest prior to about 12 years ago when the university took management control from the U.S. Forest Service. Northland Wood Products and others have logged many timber sales in the Bonanza Creek Experimental Forest prior to 1990. I would propose the following. Give the university the 12,000-acre Bonanza Creek Experimental Forest it now manages. Give the university the 10,000 acres already set aside within the Tanana Valley State Forest for research and natural areas. And since I don't see any prime forest acreage from southeast, I suggest taking the balance from there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rasmussen. You just managed to set off a little bomb here in the resource room. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Rasmussen? Sir, I thank you very much, and we will bear in mind your sensitivity to the proposed Borealis forest lands. Thank you very much. We're going to go back to Kodiak, to Mike Milligan, who says he has a time constraint. Go ahead, Mr. Milligan.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. He had to leave.
Okay. Do we have anybody there who wants to provide his testimony?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Can that person proceed, please?
Hi. My name is Charlie Rapp, and I'd like to comment on Dr. Bob Johnson's testimony that I agree 100%. And in the course of my time, I've witnessed land acquisitions where, you know, that eventually they say the public will have the access and build access to, you know, recreation and so forth. But over the course of time, I find restrictions are laid out, you know. And at first it seems so nice and sounds good, but for whatever the reasons are, once the land's acquired, there's a lot of restrictions set on. And this just is something that Dr. Bob mentioned, that this shouldn't happen, because there is a lot of community people here in Kodiak that access that area. the Fossil Beach area, like you said, is a great tourist attraction. And I just want to reiterate, you know, that limitations do apply, you know, when time happens. And I didn't see a good valid answer from last week when Representative Ledoux asked why they would need the purchase. I didn't see a good valid answer from the University of Alaska. So, and that's it.
Thank you very much, Charlie. Anybody have any questions? Sir, we thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Brett Carlson in Coldfoot.
Hello, this is Brett Carlson. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
And I'm with Northern Alaska Tour Company, which is a small tour operator based in Fairbanks. We've been operating tours on the Dalton Highway that stretches from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay for about 20 years, since 1986. Also operate camps that provide support services along the highway of both Yukon River and Coldfoot. As most of you know, Dalton Highway was the last highway built in Alaska, very much a critical economic resource for all Alaskans, both as oil and gas transportation corridor and as a budding world-class tourism destination. My opinion, I guess a positive thing, is over the last 20 years, I think the Dalton Highway has been a real success story for public land planning in Alaska. There have been detailed public processes that have involved the Bureau of Land Management, the Park Service, State, North Slope Borough, Yukon River Villages, and private industry. That's resulted in what I think is a good focus for the highway, and that's on, number one, providing adequate support services for transportation to support very important oil development on the Arctic coast, and a recognition at the same time that the Dalton Highway provides the only land access in the Western Hemisphere to the Arctic Ocean, and provides quite a wilderness highway at the same time it's essentially an industrial highway. The result of that public planning process has limited development along the highway to nodes, so we don't have strip development, and we do this highway right in Alaska. And the second part of that is developing some strong language that ensures that each of the nodes along the highway are developed in an organized manner, so they're attractive and don't become essentially a dumping ground for a lot of supplies that come back down from the coast. There is a plan in place in the nodes. At the Yukon River, there's a lot of federal and private land ownership. In Coldfoot, it's state land ownership. And I was very surprised last week to hear, with obviously there was a planning process going on, but it actually didn't involve persons living in Coldfoot or operating businesses there, that this bill proposes to turn all of the land in Coldfoot over to, as best as I can determine, a settlement in the Brooks Mountain Range. Maybe a good idea. You know, I'm open-minded. But there are obviously a lot of downsides to that, and clearly I think private landowners up in Wiseman, which is a residential area, and those providing support services in Coldfoot should be involved in that process. Also at the Yukon River, it's proposed to give a couple square miles of land over to the University of Alaska. Again, there's many private land holders down there that would be impacted by that. Some of this land abuts their land. Villages along the Yukon River that would be impacted may be a good idea, may not be, but there should certainly be discussion before hopefully this bill leaves committee. Also, there's a third land transfer proposed just north of Happy Valley, which is about 70 miles south of the Arctic coast. Don't know much about it. Been trying to download stuff over the internet. All I know is they're looking to create some settlements along the Dalton Highway in the middle of a transportation corridor to, I guess, create, bring more people up and create more communities to create more taxes and more services that need to be provided for the state. And I would just encourage this committee to view the Dalton Highway as a tremendous resource, as Jay says, for our grandchildren, and it should be carefully managed for the future of all Alaskans. And I just encourage you to slow the process down and get the information out so all of the public knows what we're testifying on. Thanks for your time, and above all of you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson. We appreciate it. Any questions for Mr. Carlson and Coldfoot? Thank you for your testimony, sir. We appreciate it a lot. We're going to go to the off-nets. Please, Joan McBean from Tenneke, are you with us?
Hello, this is Joan McBean.
Hi, Joan. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. My name is Joan McBean. I'm from Tenneke Springs, Alaska, and thank you very much for allowing me to testify. First of all, I'd like to rebut the gentleman from Fairbanks who said that that land should be supplied for timber harvest in southeast Alaska. I can look out my window here at the public library and see easily four clear cuts within my view. And that's just a minor amount of them that have been clear-cut in my inlet. I'm a 28-year resident of Tenneke Springs, and I have concern about the transfers of large quantities of land to the University of Alaska. They're not consistent with our community plan. I've worked on the community plan. I was a planning commissioner for 20 years. And I'll quote you a little bit. It states that the residents of Tenneke Springs place high values on their current way of life, and they do not wish to encounter sudden change in the community that will result from accelerated settlement. Residents realize that change will occur, but they wish to manage it in such a way that growth is incremental and in accord with community values and municipal policy, end quote. It also states its objective that, quote, we ensure that any land disposal occurring incrementally over, that any land disposal occur incrementally over time to avoid property speculation and a land rush mentality, end quote. Property prices, I'm sure, would decline dramatically if a subdivision of these parcels that are planned for the University of Alaska were dispersed. I'm concerned also about how the plans comply with the Northern Southeast Area Plan that was put into effect in October of 2002. Several of us worked very hard with Bruce Phelps within the DNR to develop the plans for our community. We were quite satisfied with some of the decisions. And I will quote from you chapter 3, page 319, a description of one of the parcels that's going to be is part of the proposal to be given to granted to the University of Alaska. The management intent: the parcel is to be retained by the state and managed to accommodate the current recreational uses, I'm quoting, associated with the trail in the northern half of the parcel and potential development related to marine support activities adjacent to the waterfront. I continue quoting, further development of this parcel is not considered appropriate. This is a parcel that's very close to our boat harbor and is used extensively by people for a trail, for going to and from Indian River, where there's lots of hunting and fishing and recreating. It's used by tourists and locals a lot. The other parcel of land is also in the management tent, is also considered to be, is also stated lands within this parcel are to be retained by the state also. Now, I guess I have a question, and If this is so and it's supposed to be retained for public use, which it states in the plan, then I wonder if this is something that is appropriate to be transferred to the University of Alaska. If these are stated in the DNR book, is this consistent with what the plans are? I also have problems with the fact that we were not given much time for us to assimilate all this information and to make decisions and get more of our community members involved.
Ms. McBean, can you wrap up your testimony, please? We've got a lot of other people online that wanna speak.
Okay, I just think that more thought has to be given and more public participation. Thank you very much for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much. Anybody have any questions for Ms. McBean? Is there anybody there else there from Tenneke Springs that would like to testify?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can we go next to Dennis Watson in the city of Craig, please? Dennis, are you with us?
Yeah. Can you pick me up?
We hear you perfectly. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Good deal. I'm again with this mute here. All right, Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Dennis Watson. For 15 years now, I've been the mayor of the city of Craig on Prince of Wales Island. Based on my experience in municipal government and having been involved in the selection of the state lands in the Prince of Wales Island area, I'd like to offer my comments on House Bill 130. For the record, I'd like to state that I am not opposed to conveying state lands to the University Trust, and I am especially supportive of acquiring additional federal land selections for that purpose. I do, though, have issue with this bill as written. The first complaint about the process is the absolute lack of process. As was mentioned earlier, this bill has been kicking around for a year, and this is the first we know of it. I hate reacting in the last minute. It usually complicates matters. In this instance, I'd say that it is particularly troublesome because last year I also had to battle in this with the same issue with the same agencies, except for the university wasn't involved. And they hadn't done their homework and caused us a lot of grief, and we initially put out the flames and got something out of it we wanted, but it was an unnecessary fight. So the problems in the bill, if it were put into law as written, it would severely limit the ability of entitlement lands for a future Prince of Wales Island borough. I don't want to suggest that we're working on a borough right now, because we're not, but the fact is that there are some senators that really want us to have one, and we feel that, you know, maybe in the future we might find the time, you know, when the time is right to develop one here, but likely as not, we'll have one sooner than later. Regardless of when a borough may happen in this area, the economy of this island is such that it will be necessary to use every financial tool available, including these potential conveyance lands, to allow a regional government to work. As well, a future borough would need these properties to build the necessary infrastructure to provide borough services required by law. Another negative aspect of conveying lands away from DNR is that any future timber harvest activities on these lands would likely be for export. This would be a hardship for the two large and many small mills that we have in this area. They are having a real problem trying to maintain a pipeline of timber to cut, and we believe this would increase that problem. As I mentioned earlier, I worked with DNR in selecting the state lands on Prince of Wales Island. The thought while going through this process was to provide the best value possible for the island communities. Conveyance to the university was not on the table. If it would have been, you know, we would have, I'm sure we would have had a somewhat different process when we were looking at these properties to try to determine what the university would need out of it. And certainly we would have asked for a lot more property than we did, a lot more land selection acreage. So anyway, I'll finish up with a quote and two requests here. The quote comes from DNR Director of the Division of Mining, Land and Water, Bob Loeffler. When speaking of this bill, he said, "These are really our most valuable lands." Well, we agree, and that's why we're here. The request first would be for DNR and the university to withdraw from this bill the conveyance lands within the Prince of Wales Island Model Borough boundaries. If this is not to happen, the second request would be to ask this committee to hold HB 130 until these issues have been resolved, or, as I heard earlier, passing it to CNRA would be a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Anybody have any questions for Mayor Watson? Mr. Mayor, if I may ask you, I've heard a number of times today that we're rushing this process, and if you could help me a little bit, I mean, that's precisely what we're doing here, is listening to folks' concern. We're taking our time. We're opening up to plenty of testimony. When others criticize how quickly we're moving on this, What exactly do you mean? Because we're the committee of first referral, and then it goes through House Finance, and then it's headed over to Senate Resources and Senate Finance. I mean, what makes you think that this is moving at a breakneck speed, sir?
Well, I guess you'll have to excuse my paranoia, but last year when we were dealing with the Lease Lakes, Thorn Bay, DNR, Mental Health, Land Exchange issue, These very same issues that I just spoke to you were on the table. Many of the people that are working on this issue knew of these issues, and they didn't come to us. Nothing was brought up about it. I guess that makes me a little bit cynical about what might happen here.
All right. Well, I sure assure you that House Resources is trying to conduct a very orderly process of testimony, and then to proceed from there through the process through both bodies, the House and then the Senate. We thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Mayor. Is there anybody else there from Prince of Wales or your community?
I have nobody in the Craig office. If there's anybody else tuned in, I'm sure they'll say something.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think at this time we're going to go to Joe Beadle, who's online with the university. And as I stated at the outset of this meeting, Joe's going to talk about the intentions of the university and land distribution and how that differs from DNR. And then hopefully, Mr. Beadle, you can do a little bit to dispel some of these concerns that we're hearing that, suggest a degree of recklessness or uncertainty as to how we're doing things. Are you with us, Mr. Beadle?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe Beadle, Vice President for Finance, the University System Office. I'm joined by Mary Montgomery, the Director of Land Management.
And if I may, Joe, and good afternoon, Mary. We've been maintaining a 3-minute time limit for public testimony, but in the interest of kind of full disclosure, we're going to let you speak for as long as you need to kind of convey the university's mission and Mary Montgomery's philosophy on land dispersal for the university. But please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just quickly as to process, there is a section of Alaska Statutes 1440-170. It refers to the duties and powers of the Board of Regents and the University of Alaska, and it has items 7 and 8 under that 170 section, adopt reasonable rules for the prudent trust management and the long-term financial benefit to the University of Alaska of the land of the university. Provide public number 8, provide public notice of sales, leases, exchanges, and transfers of lands of the university or its interests in land of the university. So the university has promulgated policy that can be found on our website at the University of Alaska. It's Board of Regents policy P05.11.04, and it specifically goes through management of the university's real property and how we provide for very specific process of public input and final approval by the Board of Regents with our requirement that we share all of the public testimony and that furthermore the Board of Regents take testimony at their meetings.
Joe?
As to your point of a difference, normally we would go through a strategic planning process, a annual planning process that includes a development plan. Development plans would generally construe that we are going to potentially subdivide property and or make improvements to property prior to its sale. There's one very important exception that allows the university to act both in the public interest but also for the economic benefit of the university, and that is such a case where there has been an unsolicited or unadvertised offer to the university. So it was not maybe in our strategic plan or our annual plan or our development plan that that someone approaches us, such as was the case with the Triad Hospital in the Palmer-Wasilla area, where there was a need for some adjacent property to the university. We can, in those cases, high public demand for high-value potential consideration to the university, do an accelerated notice, but highly publicized 30-day notice, and then at the next scheduled Board of Regents meeting, provided that it is a meaningful sale. In other words, it's a large sale value. $500,000 is an example. Would go to the Board of Regents for them to decide and review the process of approvals. And so we do have an ability, much like a corporation in the private sector would, to respond to demand for a sale and to go through still this public process. DNR would not be able to do that and be as responsive as the university is. And again, we are held to that fiduciary trustee role in terms of having a land grant endowment. As to your point of our desire to work with people with valid existing rights, So DNR has nominated these parcels of land, and we do not have a specific idea for what we're going to do with those parcels, but be assured that as we develop ideas to sell or extract or to benefit the university by research, by sale or development of the property, that we would be engaged with the community, the closest community, the closest residents, through a public notice process. And most importantly, I think we're not in that sense of urgency stage. We are very deliberate, and we have long-term plans where people would have plenty of opportunity to engage. And if there is a valid existing right, if we're located in a municipality that has zoning ordinances, certainly we would have to adhere to all of those. If we're not located in an organized borough or municipality, then, of course, we would be looking to DNR for such development approvals. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the Resource Committee, I think it would be wrong to portray the university as anxious to develop, anxious to sell. These are going to be over a very long period of time. Some might be 50 or 100 years before we even find that there's a high enough demand for them. And throughout this process, we will be evaluating what is the proper timing with the proper planning and public input. So regardless of the perception of speed, the university will be going through a deliberate process that will not have a lot of speed associated with it.
Thank you, Joe.
Having said that, we can respond as the example with the Triad Hospital. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
My pleasure, Joe. Would you repeat for us and for Representative Seaton? What do you want to know, Mr. Representative Seaton?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, you stated the policy number on your website. Could you give that to us again?
Thank you. It would be the Board of Regents policy 05-1104.
Thank you. Joe, I've got a question for you, please. You said that DNR has nominated these parcels of land. For the benefit of the committee and those in the room and those that are listening telephonically, just to demystify the process a little bit, can you explain for us how it originated, whether this is a DNR selection or the university selection, or how the whole thing unfolded from its inception, and how long the university and DNR have been working on this project, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It has several aspects to it. Some of these ideas, as was mentioned earlier in testimony, like the Tanana Forest, came from legislators debating and discussing Senate Bill 7. And so this was culminated with the April approval of Senate Bill 7 in the year 2000. And so even then, there was a lot of input for concepts for research. So the Poker and Caribou parcels had been mentioned at that time. The Bonanza Creek, the property on the south-facing slope of the ridgeline halfway to Nenana between Fairbanks and Nenana, came up in that public discussion. So some were, especially those dealing with research and educational properties, had come up as nominated ideas, some by the university, some by key representatives during the legislative deliberations. As far as most of the property from DNR, and if DNR is on the line, I would encourage you to ask for their input, but it came about through their area planning process. And an area planning process by DNR is a process by which they investigate all of the potential utilizations of state land. And that includes something that's important in Southeast for value-added timber and the state's desire to assist that industry. And so the state has inventoried all of their timbered state land and tried to reserve, and in most cases, and in our opinion, excluded us from given the opportunity to identify any of that property. For the benefit of the value-added sawmill timber harvesting industry. And so that land was taken off the table, and then area plans took off the table what was necessary for habitat, the critical habitats for flora and fauna that scientists, including the Habitat Division at that time, located in Fish and Game, or DEC, And Fish and Game also participated in the determination for what was considered habitat. And then what was development or what was set aside for settlement or for recreation uses were then available. And furthermore, then what was subtracted from that potential selection, it's nomination by DNR, were the lands that were currently in their five-year plan for selling. DNR, like the university, has an annual plan to sell state land, and so they reserve for themselves those lands that were already contained in their five-year plan. The area plans were really a part of like a public zoning process, if you would. These have these attributes. They would be acceptable for recreation. And as an example in recreation, that would include private cabin sites. That would include tourism and potentially even a lodge utilization, or the coming ashore of an example in southeast Alaska of a boat that would drop off people that were interested in recreation. So that's a quick overview. DNR could do a much better job than myself.
All right. So I'm sorry. Representative Ledoux, go ahead.
Yeah. Joe, there are a couple of things that I'm a little bit confused about still. It sounds like from your testimony today and then the governor's letter saying that this bill is the product of more than a year of discussions between the department, DNR, and the university, that there was quite a bit of discussion between the governor's between DNR and the university as to what lands were going to be on this bill. Is that correct?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, our discussions with DNR actually date back to Governor Knowles' invitation in the year 2000, where Governor Knowles sought DNR's nominations, and the university had discussed some of these lands, you know, for 2 years during that administration, and then certainly in a serious way, the last 5 months, the university and DNR has looked at lands. We've asked for some lands, specifically on steep mountain slopes, located in the Bradford Canal as an example, and that's down by Hyder, Alaska, in our southernmost border, and some properties in the Skagway area that we didn't think we could ever develop. So there was some fleshing out of the nomination list that was provided by DNR, and in fact, this has been an ongoing effort.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
Yes, could I? Thank you. Through the chair. And that's what's the thing that's confusing to me, Joe, because as you know, President Hamilton spoke to the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly the other night, and this specifically involves the rocket launch property. And my understanding that he was quoted in the newspaper as saying that he had absolutely no idea that the university was going to get this land. So I'm just really confused about the necessity of having this rocket launch complex land on as part of this.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Representative Elkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, do you think the university would be interested in receiving some of this land and maybe even some land in the Tongass if they had, in the case of the Tongass, a covenant on it that said that the university would have to do value added? You know, I see that as an advantage in two ways. In 80 years, they could do value added again, one, and then also getting back closer to home to Neats Bay, if a plan could be come up where it was conveyed to you, but for a certain length of time, that watershed was protected at a cost to Sarah for some X number of dollars a year. Do you think the university would be open to something like that?
Representative Elkins, through the chair, as to value added, obviously through a development plan, we anticipate adding value to any and all property that gets transferred through this bill to the university. I believe you're mostly referring to timber when we talk about value added. In this selection scenario, the nominations that are provided were not nominated for their timber value. Those were reserved for the state. Having said that, there could be some secondary, tertiary value from timber. Currently, the university is treated as a private corporation, and we do not have a primary manufacturer requirement imposed upon the university, and that would be an issue that you would have to consider. That's not to say that the university would not work with local value-added mills, and so that becomes a legislative question. So obviously there very well could be some incidental timber extraction on some of these properties, but not the major purpose for them being transferred. As to Neats Bay, we would be taking that property subject to the valid existing rights. We believe the reason that property is of value is because of the current use of that property, and would be only contemplating economic uses of the property that were compatible with Neats Bay. You've mentioned how could we work in partnership with Neats Bay. As an example, we are familiar with a shore-based excursion where tourism can go up and view bear watching in that area, and that is something that that they themselves, the Neats Bay Sarah Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, promoted and was approved by the state, and they basically managed that, and we would be taking the land subject to that. I believe that we will be able to preserve that highest and best use for the Neats Bay. Still, the issue of even one piece of property falling off the list is a concern to us. We would be very motivated to try to provide assurances in a transfer deed and in covenants, as you referred to, and or in agreements that would assure whether it be the Kodiak Rocket Range site and or Neats Bay and or other sites that come up that become issues.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Elkins, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, I guess maybe you didn't. I don't think you really answered my question about if you were to receive forest lands within the Tongass with a covenant on it that required some value added, so that the mills in that area wouldn't be jeopardized. Would you be interested?
Thank you, Mr. Elkins. Representative Elkins, through the chair, I apologize. We had actually offered that to the state, that we would be pleased to accept land within their defined state forest, and that we would be happy to accommodate the rotation of the timber such that that timber was allocated to, dedicated for, the local value-added mills. So if for some reason this bill got changed and parcels of those lands currently not included that you just defined, we would not object to the requirement that those have value-added local manufacturer stipulations.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Joe, if I may, just so I heard you correctly on two points, please. One is, I heard you say that this was a collaborative amongst various state agencies that included yourself, DNR, Fish and Game, and I heard you name some other folks that were involved in the process. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, on the area plans, So unrelated to the university, on the area plans, which have been accomplished during the last 10 years, primarily in Southeast Alaska, they, in essence, evaluated those lands in Prince of Wales, in southern Southeast Alaska, in central Southeast Alaska, and in northern Southeast Alaska, and they, in essence, said these are the acceptable uses for these lands. They worked with DEC, Fish and Game, and their own offices of DNR. They went out to the communities and took public testimony, and they arrived at a conclusion and published a area plan. So it's that resource, that area plan that has been published that can be found on the DNR site, where people can go and see how was the land studied. And so that was a very collaborative process involving the public and these other state agencies. That is prior to and the resource from which DNR nominated these lands to the university for selection.
Thank you, Joe. Did you also say that some of these lands, or a percentage or portion or many, or I want to get you to define the word, where they were going to be sold by DNR sometime in the next 5 years, that was part of their area plan? Did you also indicate that?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. They have a different process than the university does, but that is absolutely correct, that they categorize these lands so that they, as a state agency, in their sales plans, can determine what the purpose of the sale would be and how they would restrict the land's utilization when it was sold.
All right, and that applied to some of these lands, not all of the lands that are before us today. Is that correct?
Most of the southeast lands were included in the area plans. Some of the lands elsewhere were not.
Okay. Does anybody have any? I'm going to keep Mr. Beadle online, but I'd like to get back to some testimony from people who've been very patient from around the state and let Mr. Beadle listen in to what some of those public comments are. So unless it's something pressing by committee members, I'd rather Joe, if you and Mary can just stay on the line and kind of sample public testimony, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Anybody have any pressing questions? Okay. Let's go to Wrangell, please. In Wrangell, I've got Daniel Trail. Are you with us, Mr. Trail?
Well, surprise, surprise. Yes, I am.
All right. Can you help us a little bit? We're having a difficult time hearing you.
Yeah, I don't know what you can do about it. How do you hear me now?
Oh, we hear you now.
Okay. My name's Daniel Trail. I wanted to testify regarding the Tom's Place land offering. We're all pretty dismayed about this. I'm speaking mostly for myself, but there is a homeowners association that will also be weighing in. We feel that it's just not, that this land giveaway really takes away our capacity for self-determination as a community out there. The size of this parcel, which is 2,360 acres, dwarfs our small community, and it's right adjacent to it. And we're very fearful that clear-cutting is on the way. And that would just be unacceptable to all of us who've moved out to this community in search of the wilderness life. And we have this a lot of little cabins out there, and it's very pristine and beautiful. The size of the parcel seems a little unfair, you know. We honor the mechanism to fund the university. I mean, the university needs to be funded, but for us to give up such a large parcel, it hardly seems fair. I guess that's the bulk of my comments at this point.
Thank you very much, Mr. Trail. Any questions for Mr. Trail? Thank you very much for your testimony, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to go to Ketchikan, to Walter Northrup.
Yes, my name is Walter Northrup. I've been a resident of Ketchikan for over 50 years. I first started commercial fishing here in 1948, so I have a good idea what fishing was then and what it is now. It deteriorated severely in 20 or 30 years back, and now it's been revitalized by Sarah and the hatchery in Sitka there. And I am very opposed to the granting of land in the Neats Bay area. Sarah has spent many dollars and effort in establishing this fish hatchery and has revitalized the fishing in this area. Any income that is derived from tourism should go to Sarah. And above all, don't log their watershed. If the university gets the land and it's sold later on, there's no guarantee that it won't be logged, as far as I can see. Today is the first chance that I have of seeing what areas, you know, the paper carried an item that it was going to be Neats Bay and Mosier Bay and these areas, but actually you need to put maps of these areas out to the public, because I think you're going to have some very incensed public if they see some of the areas you're talking about. And for instance, I'm looking at Kaufman Cove. It's been many years since I've been in Kaufman Cove. But looking at the chart of Kaufman Cove, it looks to me like you take the whole town in there. And I think you might have a tremendous uproar if you don't go out very carefully on this and let people know what you're talking about and actually publish the areas and the amount of land you're talking about taking in. Kaufman Cove is PWCC 1001.
Mr. Northrup?
Yes.
We appreciate hearing from you. I don't know how computer savvy you are, sir, but DNR's webpage does have all the maps of the land available for viewing by folks. Just for your own benefit, sir.
I don't have a computer, and there's lots of other people don't. Put it in the papers.
Okay. Representative Gatto's got a question for you, Mr. Northrup.
Mr. Northrup, you had made a statement that if this land were transferred, there's no guarantee that it wouldn't be logged. Is that a statement? I believe you said that. Am I correct?
One of the statements that was in the local paper was that they might sell partials in some of these places. And if they sell it to somebody else, is there still any guarantee it won't be logged?
Okay, and I guess then the question is there any guarantee at this moment that it won't be logged?
I would certainly hope not.
Follow-up, Representative Gatto?
No, I'm okay. I just didn't know if the status of the land at the current moment protected it from being logged, but if it was transferred, then the university could sell it, and then it could be logged. And I just want to make sure that I understood the distinction, if indeed it's protected now or not.
Well, I'd probably not, but it has been logged years ago. But let me give you an example. The university didn't make any friends here a couple of years ago when they logged an area in Mountain Point. They advertised it in Anchorage newspaper, but nobody out here knew it was going to happen till it was on top of them. So I'm sorry, but there's a lot of people who would be quite skeptical.
Thank you very much for your testimony today, Mr. Northrup. We appreciate it a lot. Representative Thomas is here, and I gather you came here more than just to listen. Representative Thomas, would just to listen today? Okay.
I have half an hour, so I figured I'd listen.
All right. All right. All right, we're going to continue with some additional testimony. I'm going to try and narrow it down to about 2 minutes, and I'm going to ask folks that are calling in not to be somewhat redundant in your testimony, because we want to try and include a lot of people, and we're backed up with quite a few folks that are on teleconference. So if you can boil it down to the most salient points, we'd appreciate it. I'd like to go to Sitka, to Nick Stelzenmuller. Are you with us, Nick?
Yeah, hi, thank you. My name is Nick Stelzenmuller. I'm a University of Alaska Southeast student. I care about the university quite a bit and would like to see it succeed, but I've got a couple of concerns, well, several concerns about the lands transfer in the Sitka area. I think that several of these parcels, like Lusiansky Peninsula, Middle Island, the parcel in Baranof Warm Springs, are a big enough deal to this community that each one specifically should require public hearings and a full public involvement individually with each parcel. And I'd like to suggest that this process should take 5 years. I think that DNR needs to come here, the university needs to come here. They need to take into account each one of these parcels individually and talk about the future development goals with the community, with the city government, with the tribes. And because the university guy there, Joe Beadle, said the university doesn't really have a sense of urgency with these properties, I don't see why a development plan of this magnitude shouldn't take 5 years, frankly. And if not 5 years, then at least a lot more than is being talked about now. I'd like to reply also to Representative Gatto there about the distinction that he, I think, was asking for. And I think my reply to that would be that the lands are currently in state state hands right now, and the university is not a government institution. And as a citizen of Alaska, I feel like I have a lot more say and a lot more just a lot more influence in what happens to these lands, whether they're logged or subdivided or what, versus university who says they're going to take my testimony, but I really don't have any guarantee that they're going to do what's best for the community versus, what'll make them money, which is understandable.
Nick, thank you very much, and we are very pleased to be taking your testimony right now. We thank you very much, and we're going to go to Port Alexander now to Tarnica Garnick. And there are several people there. Do you hear us, Tarnica? Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Do you have several people with you, Tarnica?
Yeah, there are four community members that like to make testimony. We have about eight people here total, but only four would like to speak.
Okay, can we try and narrow that down a little bit, because we've got people from about nine different communities that would like to speak. So would you begin, and then maybe we'll narrow it to three people for 2 minutes each. Would you begin, please?
Well, I don't have anything, but Marty Raymond will go first.
Okay.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'd like to state that I oppose House Bill 130.
Please state your name for the record, please.
Oh, my name is Marty Raymond.
Thank you, Marty.
I'd like to state that I oppose House Bill 130, where the state wants to transfer lands to the University of Alaska. The university could then develop the land how they wish. This is not a proper way to fund the university, and in the process, the governor is bypassing local government and land use planning efforts for towns like Port Alexander. This directly goes against our Port Alexander comprehensive plan. Our plan states we wish to maintain our small town atmosphere and residents favor a stable population and economy. It's disrespectful not to seek community input, especially when the land is near a town. The transfer of 267 acres would have an enormous impact, considering the town's total deeded acreage currently is only 128 acres. And of these 128 acres, less than 80 acres are privately owned. The rest are held by the city of Port Alexander. And sale of any of this 267 acres would potentially devalue our private and city lands. Also, our city water supply is not adequate to service these lands. We worked with the state through public process to identify a compatible use of the state lands surrounding us through the Northern Southeast Area Plan. At that time, there was a lot of discussion that designating land for settlement or development was not acceptable now, and we use these lands a lot for subsistence and recreation. Also, the Northern Southeast plan, we just have currently here have the draft from December 2001, and I'm quoting from the plan, states, DNR should contact the city prior to making a decision on any applications involving development. And also, for each parcel, it also says that development is not considered appropriate during the planning period, given the uncertainty over the need for additional land in this remote fishing community and the ability of the city of Port Alexander to provide public services.
Marty, thank you very much for your testimony. Can we have the next person, please?
My name is John Lawson, and I'd like to speak basically to the water situation. Looking over your maps as best it was available from this town, it looks like it includes our watershed, our transit line, our tank, and also our chlorinator and filtration building up there. And to put populace or any kind of activity into this watershed could be completely detrimental to our total water system here for the town for potable water. Secondly, this is in direct adversity to our comprehensive plan. Even our cemetery would be completely blocked off except from a water access. I believe that's about all I have to say at this time.
Thank you very much, John. Next person, please.
Yeah, my name is Zach Lenning. I'm a resident of Port Alexander, and I'm a commercial fisherman. And I basically just have one question that hasn't really been stated yet. I don't want to reiterate everybody else's concerns here, but Mr. Beadle is saying that they would want to move slowly, and that some of these lands would not be developed for many, many years, possibly 50 or 100 years. But I was at the last teleconference here a few days ago, and it seems to me I remember hearing something about the southeast lands would be mostly used for quick cash. And, you know, that could be several years down the road, but that doesn't sound like a long-term plan to me. And I just wonder about that.
Chairman Rammers, I think I'm responsible for that confusion. The funds are supposed to be for the legacy of the next 50 to 100 years, but the university's point of view was a land disposal that should be 20-year-plus period.
Okay. Well, the other comment I have is these lands basically sandwich our town. It's a huge amount of land compared to what we have, and it sandwiches our town, and that's our you know, where we go hunting. They're really, you know, if I leave my house and go hunting, I have to go across those lands, you know, unless I want to go way, way out of our way, and would completely change almost every person in this town's activity as far as subsistence, and that's how we mainly live out here.
I understand
that. Zach,
would you hold?
That's basically all I have. That was my main comment.
Thank you, Zach. If you'll stay on the line for me, please. Representative Seaton has a question, and then I'd like to go back to Mr. Beadle and ask him a question for the benefit of the folks in your community. Representative Seaton?
Chairman, yeah, I'm concerned a little bit of the testimony we've had here is talking about trails that are going across the land in this box is in the city, and yet I don't see on the maps any access routes identifying along those existing and used trails. So are there specific trails that go from the community across those lands to access? I think we heard the cemetery and some other portions.
John, Mr. Walson, can you speak to that briefly for us, or Zach, either?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Who's this, please?
This is Zach Lenning, Port Alexander. That whole area on the inland side of Port Alexander, the larger tract of land, that whole area, number one, as it was previously stated, is our watershed. Our water line goes across it. Our tank is up on that hill up behind it. Our backup water, the city lake back there, is on it, and there are no marked trails. The whole area we use for hunting. I've shot many deer up there, and so has most of my neighbors. And it's the whole access to the whole mountain that we hunt on a regular basis every winter.
All right, Zach, thank you very much. A follow-up, Representative Seaton?
Yes, I'd appreciate it if you could send the committee some notations on one of the maps for where your water line is, et cetera, because you know, even through this, DNR is supposed to maintain right-of-ways for existing uses. So if you could supply that to us, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Joe Beadle, are you still on the line? Joe?
Yes, I'm here. They just unmuted me.
Great. Joe, let me ask you a question. We've been hearing from some of this testimony, and if you can just come back in and speak to this. We've been speaking to some of the residents that are out at Port Alexander, and they're an organized city. They've represented there's about 120 acres in the organized community, and only about 80 of those acres are presently in private land, and the land that's pending for acquisition by the university and then dispersal into private hands. Could you just reiterate how a process will work in a very small community like that, please?
Mary Montgomery, can you please field that question and talk about easements and rights of way and process?
Sure. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, first of all, if we were going to consider developing property at Port Alexander, the first thing we would do is go to the community to talk to the community about that project. Sometimes, periodically, it's just not feasible and the timing's not right for development. And I haven't been to Port Alexander myself, so, you know, maybe a DNR person could speak respond better to these questions. If there are trails and access issues, we're very careful to always provide access to adjacent properties. We get people through a property out the other side. So I'm not aware that there is a water system on this. If there are already public uses or community uses of the property, it's not the type of property that we would have wanted to have in this land selection list. So that's something that we'll look into. DNR should be looking into that also.
Mary, Chairman Ramirez, if I could just follow up with you, specifically when it comes to a small community like Port Alexander, will there actually be somebody on the ground who meets with the community leaders in Port Alexander to discuss things like a watershed and some of their other concerns prior to dispersal of property by the university?
Absolutely. We would always go on the ground and meet with the community and hear the community concerns. We generally spend 8 or 12 hours listening to the community concerns and trying to mitigate those concerns in our first meeting. So we would work very closely with the community for whatever project we're planning, to try to develop a project that's compatible with the community.
Chairman Ramirez, again, if I could follow up with you, Mary, I think that to some extent, and this is just my own intuition, is that members of smaller, more rural communities in Alaska have a sense that there's a great deal more infrastructure and more process in the more urban or organized parts of Alaska. How does that differentiate when you go into a small community like Port Alexander? Would you go through the process specifically for I don't know how many, Zach, if you're still on the line, if you can tell us how many people live in the Port Alexander area, how would you, and then Mary, if you could follow up once we get that answer as to how you would specifically handle this process from beginning to end, please. Zach, how many people live in Port Alexander?
I think our last census had 69 people on it. One quick comment is that, it seems to me that if somebody were to come out here and look at this land and do a walkthrough with the community members, they would have a very quick sense of our concerns and see where we're trying to come from on this. This is not, it's a big
fact. We thank you very much, but we're really trying to expedite testimony. We've already heard from you. Mary, if you would go through the process there of how you would approach a community like Port Alexander, 69 people, and, in a very small allotment of property, please.
Okay. Well, first of all, it would have been published in a development plan, so we would have had an opportunity, 60-day notice, that we were even considering looking at the property. So we might hear from them before we ever schedule the meeting out there. The next thing we would do is schedule a meeting with community leaders, try to have a public workshop open house, and get as many of the local people to come to that meeting as possible. And we would bring along with us typically an engineer or surveyor that would help us on a design of a project. We would listen to whether or not there are utilities available, water and sewer, what the impact would be on the community, where we would have to put public access easements. If there's even a market for those lots, we would be evaluating at the same time a market. Once we have gone through that process, then we would come back, work on designing, assuming we determined it was feasible, we would then design a project and probably go to the community again, or we'd send the project out to the community if we didn't go out there personally, and get additional feedback from the community. We understand about protecting watersheds. We've developed a lot of lots, say in Coffin Cove, other small communities, and once we've gone through that community process, then if the community has a platting commission or platting board or has platting authority, we would also have to go through that public process and that
Mary?
Public platting notice period. Often that's the state of Alaska in cases of small communities, so we would then file that plat with the state of Alaska and go through another public process with the state of Alaska. At that time, the state's going to ensure that access has been provided to adjacent property owners and that we protected streams and that we are complying with laws and regulations as to on-site water and septic, that sort of thing.
Mary, how many people will be there on behalf of the university wearing "Hello, my name is" buttons?
It's usually at least two people from the university and then typically a consultant.
All right, so a minimum of three people would be there. Representative Ledoux, you have a question for somebody from Port Alexander or for Mary Montgomery?
Either Mary Montgomery or Joe Beadle.
Okay, please go ahead.
Well, I've listened to Mary's testimony about how people would be coming into the communities and asking questions and getting comments. And then I've also had the chance to review 05-11-04 of the university's policy. And that looks to me, the university's policy, very much like Section 1440-366 of this old bill, which was then repealed by this new House Bill 130. So I was wondering, in light of the university's intention to go out to the community, solicit public comments and so forth, what is the purpose of repealing AS 1440-366, which provides for that public comment period?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, the entire section is not repealed. One of the management requirements for university land still is in the bill, that last bulleted item. There are several sections within that management requirements for university land in old Senate Bill 7 that are not appropriate given the fact that that the mineral properties were not selected. That the university policy already exists to provide that protection. And finally, we do want to be more responsive and faster than DNR can be, to be market responsive to an opportunity. And so we do not want to be another DNR that actually cannot respond in many cases to a market demand for a reasonable sale with all the caveats that we're willing to go through.
Thank you. Representative Seaton, you have a question for Mr. Beadle or Ms. Montgomery?
Yes, I do. First of all, as I read 1440-366, this says the university land under this section shall, and then gives the conditions of notice and public comment, whereas the university plan that we have before us, P051104, says to the extent practicable, provide notice. So there's a huge difference between the statutory requirement that you will give notice and take public comment and the university's policy that to the extent practical, you'll provide that notice. But I guess my chief concern, as I've raised several times, is about access. And your policy, the one, the 1104 that I'm talking about, number six, says access through university property subject to the receipt of acceptable tort immunity for death, personal injury, property damage occurring on university lands. The university will recognize or provide alternate access for RS-2477 right-of-ways and existing state-identified historic trails which cross the investment property. And in addition, that you'll provide additional easements at fair market value. And I guess I'm trying to figure this out. Are you saying, I mean, what your policy says is you're only going to give people access through your lands, even on RS-242477 rights away, if they provide you immunity and other, you know, fair market value kind of charges? Is this, I mean, is that correct?
Well, this is Mary Montgomery. The region's policy deals with, that is dealing with when others are coming to us on university lands to get a specific easement. If we're issuing easement for private access through our property or commercial access through our property, then we have an indemnification clause in the easement, and that's true. For access through the properties, if they're undeveloped, that means just the public casually using the property to go through our property to get to the Tongass and recreate, or go on this property to pick blueberries, whatever it is. It's covered in this bill that the public can do that. And in fact, the public does that on existing university lands. I just wanted to comment also on public notice in Regents policy. There's also a public notice requirement in the Alaska statutes. That's 1441.70, so there's also a public notice in there. So we can't get around public notice even if it wasn't practicable.
Any additional questions for Mr. Beadle or for Ms. Montgomery from the committee? All right. If we can keep you, online, we may try and wrap up with you after we take some additional public testimony. If we can go back to Sitka, to Tim Siosik.
Hello, it's Tim Chalzik.
Chalzik, sorry about that, Tim.
Oh, no problem. First of all, I'd like to thank you both chairs and committee members for hearing our testimony today. I appreciate your time. I realize that you've been receiving a lot of input regarding this House bill, and again, I thank you. My name is Tim Chalzik. I live in Sitka, and I'm also a property owner in Baranoff Warm Springs. And before I begin my testimony, I'd also like to urge you that Baranoff Warm Springs, though not, you know, officially recognized as a city per se, is a community of people, though for the most part part-time residents, and I do have concerns that that community would not be might not be heard for this public comment period that's being discussed. And I'd like to propose that Baranoff, Warm Springs, and all of the property owners and homeowners there would be part of this public testimony and not just considered as part of Sitka. To not be redundant, I oppose House Bill 130, I'm disappointed by the land grants, particularly on Baranoff Island, Port Alexander, Middle Island, Lisianski Peninsula, Baranoff Warm Springs, and I believe that, in particularly with the Baranoff Warm Springs parcel where I own property, if you see by the map, that's 267 acres on the south side of the bay,
which pretty much which does compromise the entire watershed of Baranoff, the Baranoff River, and the Salt Lagoon, or what we refer to as the Salt Chuck. I believe that this land in Baranoff Warm Springs has much more recreational, biological, and historical value than it could have as developed land. And if this parcel were sold to any developer, I believe that it would have monumental effects upon a really very small, precious, and beautiful place. I'd also like to make a response to I forget who asked it. Excuse me, but why some of us feel that this is moving too fast. One reason here in Sitka, in particular, many of us we do feel that this is being quote fast tracked unquote because in response or in excuse me, talking about the Sitka Access Project. This is something that's big for us right now as well, is we were given less than 1 week notice that there was a public testimony hearing. The DNR was coming to town. Among some other issues that I don't want to confuse the issues here, but there's been a couple other issues that, you know, riders that have been attached for certain people getting more IFQs and whatnot, that seem to be trying to slide by the Sitka community recently, and that's why we're saying fast track. That's why we're saying this is moving too fast. We feel like we're not getting enough time to react to these issues. We don't feel like we're getting enough time to get the entire public's awareness these issues.
Tim?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Is it a beautiful place in Baranoff Warm Springs?
Baranoff Warm Springs is paradise.
Are you a private property owner there?
Yes, sir. I am a private property owner.
Would other people enjoy owning private property in Baranoff Warm Springs?
I'm sure many people would enjoy owning property in Baranoff Warm Springs.
Excellent. Thank you for your testimony today.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you. If we can go back to Fairbanks, Maude and Albert, are you still with us? In Fairbanks?
Yes. Tell me you want to give my time.
I'd like to give my time to my husband, Albert.
Oh, please feel free. Please state your name for the record, please.
Yeah, I'm Albert Feig. I've been in the timber industry for 61 years, 35 of it being in Fairbanks, as four-star lumber. And I have a prepared statement I'd like to read. When Governor Murkowski was campaigning for governor, he promised to encourage resource development. This bill does just the opposite. The Bonanza Creek Experimental Forest was established when the state leased 12,500 acres to the U.S. Forest Service for a research forest. Even though there was a lot more land available, they deemed that 12,500 acres was adequate. The lease was for 50 years, of which 43 years have passed. 8 years ago, the U.S. Forest Service pulled out, leaving the lease to the University of Alaska. During the 35 years that the U.S. Forest Service managed the lease, they managed it as a productive forest. They had the Alaska Forestry Division conduct timber sales using different methods of reforestation and logging. The winter of 1971-72, John DeZotta had six plots logged. Three of them were clear cuts and three were shelter wood or selective logging. They did strip logging where they would log a strip and leave a strip to reseed the logged area. Another way was to leave seed trees throughout the area, an area otherwise clear cut. Neither of these methods proved very effective, but the State Division of Forestry settled on clear cutting and then scarified the land and planted seedlings. When the U.S. Forest Service pulled out, leaving the management of the university, they ended all logging. When there was a heavy infestation of bugs, they said, leave it and we'll see what happens. They didn't need to watch this forest to see what would happen. All they had to do was look at what was happening on the Kenai Peninsula and the Copper River Basin. The bugs were denuding the forest. During this period, the Alaska Division of Forestry was marking out timber sales that had heavy bug kill. Luckily, an export of round logs was happening to absorb the logs. The exportation was a big boost for the small timber industry in the interior. The export compensation took place between August and breakup, creating year-round employment instead of just the summer months when building was going on. In 1982, a group of loggers and firewood cutters formed an association and lobbied to get a state forest established. It didn't happen in 1982. It did happen in 1983. The bill made it a multiple-use forest. After the 1983 fire in the Rosie Creek area, the State Division of Forestry salvaged over 24 million board feet of log. If there hadn't been a small timber industry in place, the 24 million board feet of timber in the Rosie Creek area, the 5 million board feet of timber on the Delta Ag Project, and the millions of board feet of bug-killed timber would have been wasted. The university had to remove some trees so that the dish would work properly. Instead of making money off the timber, they paid about $150 a tree to a contractor to remove the trees and then give the contractor the trees. There are 254,000 acres in the Chena Hot Springs Recreation Area. If the university just wants to watch trees go, there's a lot of good timber in that area for them to watch. The last section in the bill allows the university to dispose of some or all of the research land. This was supposedly not allowed under the Tanana Valley State Forest Bill. The reasoning was that this would prevent controversy with private landowners, even though the intent was when the Tanana Valley State Forest was established, there had been conflict with landowners boarding the state forest. Given the past record of the university, I don't believe there will be a program to encourage timber development.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony. And, we're going to come back in here to the room. We have the mayor of Port Alexander is with us. Mayor Gifford, is that right? Yes. Sounds like you come from a beautiful community.
It is. We like it there. Some of this is, my name is Deborah Rose Gifford. I'm the mayor of the city of Port Alexander. And the Alaska State Constitution, Article 8, Section 10, reads, no disposals or leases of state land or interest thereof shall be made without prior public notice and other safeguards of the public interest as may be prescribed by law. We don't feel we have been afforded time to fully respond to House Bill 130. Recently, we passed Resolution 0501, a resolution for the City of Port Alexander opposing the University of Land Bill in the Alaska State Legislature. In part, this resolution reads, transferring these parcels would impact the community's watershed, vital local hunting and hiking areas, and adjacent private land owned by Port Alexander residents. A parcel to the west of our community was designated as general use in the northern southeast area plan. This parcel encompasses a large portion of our watershed, which is an area used for collection of water for our water system, making it a sensitive area for us. Watersheds, by definition of DNR's plan, will remain state lands. In DNR's plan under the Baranoff Port Alexander area section under management intent for the Port Alexander parcels, it states in part that residential or other forms of development are not appropriate given the uncertainty over the need for additional land for residential development, the availability of existing private and city lots for settlement, and the inability of the City of Port Alexander to provide public services.
Mayor Gifford?
Yes.
We would be so delighted if you would make a copy of that, and we could do that for you right now and pass it out to the committee. And frankly, it would be so much more beneficial to have you here as a real live person, giving some spontaneous testimony to members of the committee who might be interested in how it affects a small community. Henry, could you help us? We'll make a copy of that right away.
Okay. Actually, this morning I gave to your...
We already have it?
Aides, your packet. Interns.
It is in our packet already?
I guess it isn't in my packet, and I'll just say this briefly if I could. Our point is that the parcels in Port Alexander should have not been selected. So I'm saying that I will...
Does anybody have some questions for the mayor? Because you're so representative of a small community that feels like it's being unduly impacted. Representative Seaton?
Yeah, thank you. Your testimony on the watershed was the land to the west or inland parcel. Was there a problem, shall we say, with the on the other side of the town? I mean, with the parcel on the other side, was it part of the watershed? Was it, what's the consideration of the other parcel?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. The parcel to the east is not, there is not a watershed in there. That parcel is used heavily for subsistence hunting. We're a very remote community, and subsistence is a mainstay of our community. So we, when DNR did come to our community, we went through this process, and they were very aware that we really wished those lands to remain in their state. And we felt that at that point, the state would be a good steward.
Does anybody else have any questions for the mayor? I've got a couple, because I want to understand this process well. We heard from Joe Beadle and from Mary Montgomery, Madam Mayor, that they're going to come in there with a minimum of three people, with an engineer or survey and a couple of people from the university. How do you see that exchange unfolding? You know, when they come to their community, can you demystify it from the user end for the committee a little bit, please?
Well, first of all, I'd say I would hope that they wouldn't be coming, because these parcels should not have ever been considered for this use. But when people come to our community like that, they generally, I as the mayor will meet them. I'll go to my community, notify our community, open up the community hall, start up the oil stove, get it warm, maybe make some coffee, and then people will come and interact with them, ask questions, and I take a big role on as getting as much information as I can, because a lot of times the information will get given out to our communities after these people live. They'll say, hey, what were those guys here about? What do they have to say?
Now, there are about 70 people in Port Alexander, is that right?
Yes.
How many people are likely to attend a meeting if it's well noticed by the university prior and you know, through local, you know, communication organs? How many people are likely to attend a meeting like that?
Given this issue, I would say probably 15, maybe 20.
Okay. And how many would participate in an 8, 10, 12-hour workshop? Would some stay for all of the workshop? Would some stay for a fraction of the workshop?
I would say that some would stay for a part of the workshop. The council members and probably planning commission members would all probably stay for the full workshop.
How many people are on your local council, and how many are in the planning commission?
We have 7 council members and 5 planning commission members.
Do any of those overlap, or is it 12
no,
separate
they,
people?
Yes, 2 of them overlap.
Okay. So there would be 8 or 9 or 10 community leaders that would be interacting with the university folks. Mary and Joe Beadle, are you still there? We lost.
If they just unmuted us, we're available.
Thank you, Joe. We've got the mayor of Port Alexander here, and we're just trying to get a handle on how this land selection process would work with very small rural communities that have watershed issues and subsistence issues. I'm just trying to demystify the process a little bit. And just to summarize, Mayor Gifford said that out of a community of 70 people with proper notice, upwards of 15 would attend the workshop, and they do have a council and a planning commission, and say 8 or 10 of those people would attend some portion or majority of the portion of the meeting. Mary, can you address a little bit how you would interact with a small group like this? Obviously, their community feels threatened somewhat by some of these issues. Could you, if we could relax things a little bit, if you would just interact with the mayor a little bit, I'd appreciate it a great deal.
Mary, when you did so, could you go through the Kaufman Cove experience? It was also brought up earlier, and I think you have a great success story with Kaufman Cove.
Thank you. Go ahead, please, Mary.
Okay. Well, again, we would come in and work with the community one-on-one. We'd sit down with each individual. We'd bring aerial photography and mapping and handouts. Often we send our handouts in advance so people can get up to speed on the project before we come. In Kaufman Cove, you know, it's about the same type of a turnout. We talk about what types of development opportunities there are on the property, because obviously my job is to try to generate revenue from the property. So we do talk about what types of development projects would best suit their community. And for this exercise, I'm just going to assume it would be subdivision lots. We would talk about how large do the subdivision lots need to be. Part of our market is the community, their children. We want to be able to market these lots. We also talk about covenants. What types of covenants would you like to see on the property? What types of does the community want to see the university construct the roads, or if we're going to put in roads, or would they rather, some communities would rather we didn't construct the roads because it just increases the value of the lots. We're trying to get the lots on the market so that they're affordable, and the local community can generally do road construction at a lower cost than the university can do.
Mary, if you would pause for a second, the mayor is smiling here, some knowing sense. Mayor, would you comment on what piqued your emotional response?
Yes, the suggestion that the city could afford to do any road improvement.
Well, I'm not suggesting that. The lot owners have to pay for it. It's if we build the roads, the road construction is built into the lot price. And in Kaufman Cove, for example, the locals prefer to build their own roads. We have a homeowners association. There's a mechanism for collecting dues from the homeowners in order to do that. I'm not suggesting that the communities would provide free roads for these projects. I'm just talking about how we try to get affordable lots on the market. Often places like McCarthy don't want roads. They want 10-foot wide trail systems. So we go through evaluating all of those types of things before we move forward with a project. If you have a planning commission, then, we're going to have to get your approval before we could ever record a plat.
Mary, if you'll pause again. Mayor, what are your remarks about that?
Well, my remarks are, to begin with, we just have boardwalks, and they service, just small areas within our own community. And our community has several vacant city lots that are privately owned that people are trying to sell right now. And to open up more land for settlement it puts those people at in a competition. And it just seems silly to me to open up more land when the land within the community ourselves is not owned, it's for sale.
Yes. Mary, would you respond to that? What happens if you're in a very small community that obviously has a fragile economy for available lots for sale? How do you come in and address that? How do you price those according to market when a community doesn't have appraisers and that sort of thing? How would you address that, please?
Well, first of all, if they have lots that have been in the market for a long time, we'd probably want to look at those lots and see if the lots have problems or there just isn't a market. If that's the case, we probably wouldn't be there to begin with, because we would have already known this parcel wouldn't have floated to the top of our development list if it's not, there's no market to meet the demand. So or if there are is no market for the lots. Whatever we do, we have to price these at fair market value. We can't come in and depress a market. That isn't something we're going to do. We watch markets. We're familiar with developers and who's operating in what communities. Right now, Mat-Su Borough is the fastest-growing borough, I think, in the state, yet we're not in the market because everywhere we go, we have private developers that are developing lots, and we can't really be that competitive with Davis-Bacon wages that we pay. So we watch markets. Our time eventually comes in all of these markets. We're here for the long term, so at some point we'll get into the Mat-Su Borough market. But in the case of Port Alexander, the market just doesn't sound like it's there right now, based on what some of the locals are saying. We would just continue to watch the market, and often, you know, it wasn't there in Sitka 10 years ago, but the city of Sitka is now inviting us in to do projects. So we often respond to communities requesting that we come into their community to do projects.
So, Mary, would somebody from Port Alexander, would the mayor see somebody from Port Alexander within 90 days or 180 days after this potential land grant transaction is made, or would the city of Port Alexander, the community of Port Alexander, not see anybody from the university until such a time as which you develop an area development plan or put lots up for sale? How long would they lag before they actually saw members from the university come visit their community?
Well, typically you wouldn't probably see us until we were looking at the potential of doing a project in your community. But what happens is the community often gets in touch with us or with something going on. There'll be a local person that wants to do something on our property. So we end up, when we own large blocks of land in communities, we end up in communication typically with the communities on, you know, a few times a year we usually are talking to the communities on various issues. You know, we haven't any specific plans to do a tour of all of these properties at this point. If the Port Alexander, the community would like us to come there and just discuss what we're doing and to take notes and learn more about their community, we'd be happy to do that also. It's usually more initiated by a community. We have a lot of parcels in our inventory, and we don't necessarily end up in every community every year or even every 5 years.
Mary, thank you very much. Madam Mayor, while you have the university people on the line, is there any parting remarks you'd like to apprise them of for your community on your behalf?
I would suggest that if they came to our community and looked at the parcels that were proposed, that they would not be interested in them for development.
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. We appreciate you spending time with us. Before we wrap up this afternoon, I want to go back to the phones and just get a couple of opinions from Petersburg and one from Anchorage, just so we're well represented regionally from around the state. From Petersburg, is Dave Kensinger there, please?
Dave Kensinger had to leave. There are other people who are waiting, though.
Julie Hersey, is she with us, please?
Yes, I am. How much time do I have?
About 2 minutes, please.
Okay, my name is Julie Hersey. I'm from Petersburg. I'm opposed to House Bill 130. A lot of people have said things that I already agree with. I think the university will try to maximize profits from selling this land. They're not going to be selling it to local people because they can't afford to hang on to this land forever. And selling it off piecemeal is going to be a land management headache for the university. I think lots of this land will end up in private hands, and then the university won't be managing it at all. They may say that they can help us by putting covenants in and this and that, but if that land goes to private hands, we're not going to have any control over it. Joe Beadle said that if these lots were sold, it would realize about $5 million per year for the university. That's just 1% of its annual budget. I think the uproar that this is causing does not warrant the small amount that it's going to give the university. I believe in universities, but I think the land-grant college idea was good when it was originated in the 1800s, and we have to come up with some other way of funding the university. And yes, I've been to Warm Springs Bay. It's a beautiful place. I'm not a landowner, but I go there and I bring charter customers of mine there, and they enjoy the way it is now. Warm Springs Bay would be destroyed the way it is now if they were allowed to develop that area. And I think, yes, it would be much easier for DNR just to give the land to the university, and Senate Bill 7 was all about that, but at least Senate Bill 7 had a slower process for transferring the land. It was not just a wholesale giveaway all at once. Yes, public process is painful and messy, and it's not as efficient, and it's more expensive, but that's why we live in this country, and that's what we have to be proud of as a nation. I just want to say House Bill 130 precludes most public participation once the land's transferred. The university would have no legal reason to listen to the public on how these lands would be disposed. It would not be bound in a legal way, and this bill is not in the interest of Southeast Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie. I appreciate that. Is Eric Lee there?
Yes.
Hi, Eric.
Yes. My name is Eric Lee, and I'm a commercial fisherman here in Petersburg. I want to explain something. At the meeting held here last week when this bill was being presented to us, the DNR and university representatives told us that this bill was being fast-tracked, and the governor wanted it passed as soon as possible. They went on to say that it would be many years before any money would be realized from the sale of the land through this bill. So I ask, what was the big rush if it was going to take years to get any money for the university? They didn't have an answer except that the governor wanted it passed as soon as possible in this legislative session, which is really no answer at all. It didn't make sense to be rushing a bill of this magnitude forward for no reason. A huge land transfer bill like this should be the result of thorough public process. So I asked the DNR representative to ask his boss what the rush was and get back to me with an answer. Well, I haven't heard a word back from DNR or the university in response to my question. In the absence of even one official reason for this bill being fast-tracked, there is only one conclusion to make. The true reason is obvious, and that is that this bill's authors and promoters know how controversial it is. They want to get it passed as quickly as possible before the public has a chance to react, because they know it will likely not survive an open public process. This bill has only been out a week, and already it is being called the University Land Grab Bill instead of Land Grant Bill. That's a pretty good indication that the process needs to be slowed down and done properly, with the public included.
Mr. Lee?
Yes.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up your testimony, but I also want to share with you that part of the governor's strategy very likely is that we're also applying for an additional 250,000 acres at a matching land grant from the federal government, which is to try to get land back in the hands of the state and consequently back in the hands of the people. So I don't want you to ascribe pure Machiavellian purposes to the governor's effort. I think there's some nobility to be found in it. But we thank you very much for your testimony. I'd like to get somebody in from Anchorage before we conclude today. In Anchorage, is James Brennan there, please?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
If you'd be very brief, we're about 2 minutes before 3 o'clock. Go ahead, please.
Well, I've been waiting 2 hours to testify on Baranoff Warm Springs, but I can't help respond to what appear to be misconceptions about concerns on the process. The chair was wondered why was puzzled by why Alaskans feel rushed. The reason they feel rushed is they're not disparaging the chair or this committee. It's the level of micromanagement that the legislature is being called upon for this bill. It wasn't the legislature's idea to come up with this bill. It's an inappropriate micromanagement process to be handled by a three-month legislative term. Secondly, these process concerns are not alleviated by Ms. Montgomery's comments in the University of Alaska. The process she's describing is after the horse is out of the barn, after the state has let the university have the property, and then the university can go through a process. But once the development is ordained, it's ordained. Now, getting back to Baranoff Warm Springs, which is ST-1002, I faxed the committee a letter today attaching portions of the area plan, which was done in 2002, the Northern Southeast Alaska Area Plan. A little bit about Warm Springs. There is a settlement at the head of the bay. It's a long-standing town site, the town of Baranoff, with many lots. And in response to the chair's questions, if somebody wants to develop property there, buy property, have property there, there is land one can buy in the town site. Everybody who lives there and everybody who visits there agrees that the lagoon and the lake, which would be subsumed by this disposal, by this transfer to the university, are not appropriate for development. The lagoon's about a 200-yard skiff ride from a state-maintained float in Baranoff Warm Springs. The lake is a one-half-mile hike, which even elderly people on small cruise boats can make now that it's been improved with the help of some federal and state funds.
Mr. Brennan?
Both the lagoon and the lake are much treasured. They're undeveloped recreation sites enjoyed by many. If you could see this location, we could all save our breath. I do need to refer to what DNR's area plan study said, because as Mr. Beadle said, the area plan was in a way a zoning process to, as he put it, set the acceptable uses. Well, it did not describe this as an acceptable use here. It did not describe development of an investment property. It classified it as dispersed.
Brennan.
Yes.
Mr. Brennan, we will. I will keep your name in front of us, and I'll welcome you to provide some additional testimony, but we're going to try and stay disciplined, and it is 3:02. We're going to adjourn the meeting today of the Resource Committee. We look forward to hearing from you on Wednesday when we hold over for more public testimony. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.